for some politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics Saturday Edition. It's me, with FFP. Doing what I do, because I do it for you all day, every day. This is how we do it. Now check it out. We've got the ATM just making it rain up in Jersey. I got the Reverend coming out of the confessional. He was talking to Mike Sam, and they were sharing their relationship.
Oh, yeah, that ain't right.
And they were watching the NFL Combine on the NFL Network, so they were discussing some things. The Reverend had to take a sabbatical. His body is not feeling too good. He done got worked over by Mike Sam in the shower. I'm sorry.
Oh, you are not right. You are not right. That's foul. You know that, right?
I know. Forgive me, Lord. Forgive me. For
he's not even here to defend himself.
Yeah, he is. He's here to defend himself. He's just in the other
okay.
room. Which
okay.
is cool because that means I ain't got to deal with him until he calls in. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to Fantasy Sports Politics. On today's show, it's going to be a good show, mainly because Jerry's leaving for a little while, but he and I discussed Fred Davis getting suspended indefinitely by the NFL, finger-pointing, and D.C. we're going to hear from Jay Gruden about, you know, how he plans to stop the finger-pointing issue with the Redskins. Of course, we're going to talk about Jerry's Texans and how Bill O'Brien is now talking about Blake Bortles. Again, Johnny Manziel will not be a Houston Texan. We'll also hear from Pete Carroll on keeping the Seahawks together. And speaking of Manziel, John Elway made a little funny comment about him, emphasis on the little, and we're going to hear exactly what Elway had to say about Johnny Manziel. Also, we'll hear from Ron Rivera, coach of the Carolina Panthers. He's going to talk about what he plans to do to keep the success going in Carolina. I don't think they can unless they get a new running back. Yeah, I know they put so much money in their running backs already. Jettison them all and get a fresh young guy. So that's my topics for today. I would like to talk about UFC, but I'm going to save that for when Red Fantasy comes on because I know JT came on, doesn't want to talk about that, and he's in love right now. So I think he's helping Jermichael Finley move. As well as Fred Davis.
There we go.
Because they all disappear when they hang around Jerry. That's all I'm saying.
Like I said, you have to enjoy yourself. I'm married to my wife, but that does not mean.
What are you talking about?
Listen to what I'm saying. Listen to what I'm saying. Okay.
Okay.
I'm married to my wife, and just because what you were alluding to before we came on the air. I happen to fall in love, and only in mine, like a lot of men do when they happen to see an attractive female. Especially if they're committed to someone else, whether it's a fiance or a long-time girlfriend or even a wife. You're only human. You only go around once, and better enjoy it while you have it because you never know when you're going to lose it. Plain and simple.
Okay.
So.
I didn't say anything, Jerry. I was going to go right into, you know, Fred Davidson and stuff like that. But
I know you, Victor. I know you, Victor, and how you like to put subtle things out there. So versus you putting a subtle thing out there, I'm putting it all out on the table because I'm not scared, and not like someone else I know. So.
Oh, really? That's how you're going? That's how you're going
to
go?
Well, hey, wait. Well, you know what the proverbial shoe, if it fits, you know.
Man,
if the shoe fits. Anyway, let's talk about what you want to talk about with one of your knucklehead Redskins player.
Yeah, I know, bro. I mean, okay, here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. Fred Davis was suspended last year at the beginning of the year for his first substance abuse violation. Consequently, he was also injured as well, so it kind of worked out for him. And the Redskins had drafted a fresh tight end from Florida. And the guy, I forgot, it's Jordan something. I can't remember his last name. But the guy's pretty good.
Jordan Cameron.
And we don't have Jordan Cameron. The Redskins don't have Jordan Cameron. They got
whatever.
Something Jordan. I can't remember.
Jordan Reed, man. Jordan Reed.
Yeah, Jordan Reed. Thank you. So anyway, they draft Jordan Reed out of Florida to eventually replace Fred Davis, who they felt wasn't going to stay, but they franchised him. So they paid him a lot of money. He was suspended during the beginning of the year. Then he didn't play that much because of issues, conflict issues he had with the Shanahans. Well, when Reed got hurt, Davis came back in, did pretty well. Probably could have been a low-value free agent. But it turns around he gets popped for an illegal substance, which is non-illegal drug-related, but illegal substance in the NFL-related. Okay, so now the guy's suspended for an entire year. He's young. He just got paid like $5-6 million he got because he was franchised as one of the he had to get paid the top 5 percentage of the tight ends. Can he come back from this, JT? And if so, will anybody take a chance on him knowing he has one more strike and he's not the top-tier talent that he came out of college as?
Well, this is an issue with him. Besides all the issues, including the recent DUI that he got on Thursday, this past Thursday, he's been late to meetings. He's been sleeping. And virtually been one big knucklehead move after another. Even that's outside of the substance abuse problems that he's had and gotten suspended for. So, yeah, red flags all over the place with this kid. He's got ability, but he's not a JerMichael Finley, Jordan Cameron type of ability, something like that. So. He's going to have a hard time. I'm pretty sure he's got ability, but he's going to have a hard time getting hooked on a team without taking a substantial cut from what he was originally getting when he was with the Redskins last year. So, I mean, he's got talent. He's got NFL experience. But the problems that he has been going through and what's well documented, he's a big risk, and he's got the same, but he doesn't have the ability as a Josh Gordon or Justin Blackman. And I'm not putting them in that type of category, but those two guys I just named are in the same situation that Fred Davis is in now. One strike and you got one more strike and you got serious problems about your NFL career. So, yeah, he can get a job, but it's not going to be anywhere close where he should be compensated for his ability because of all his issues.
So, again, I'll take it to you on this level, JT. The guy, I'm struggling to come up with words because he has immense talent if he allows his talent to show through. Do you understand what I'm saying here? The one knock that
me,
I saw on.
Are you telling me that his talent has been how can I say, shackled, that he's been shackled and shown his talent, and that's why you haven't seen as much talent as he has on the field, because it's pretty much been shackled or shut down. I don't think that's the case.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he's doing it to himself.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
He's limiting his abilities by either his attitude, his work ethic, or his inability to relate to being a professional. At USC, you know, Pete Carroll, he talks about competition. And he succeeded under Pete Carroll. Now, he has competition in Jordan Reed, and yet he can't seem to find his way to compete on the same level that he did in college against the professionals on a team that lacks tight end star power or the gifted tight end. Because I'm not going to lie, Paulison is not a top-tier tight end. He's an in-line, I can block very well, I can catch the ball decently tight end. Jordan Reed is a rookie, or was a rookie. He was explosive. He's like a younger Shannon Sharp. Not a really good blocker at all, but you put him out in space, he can catch the ball, and he can muscle through, and he can run away from people. So Davis, he had the full package. He could block. He can catch. He was big. He was fast. But for whatever reason, he couldn't put the pieces together, and he's damaged goods now. The Redskins lose out on that money they franchised him with, and they won't get a compensatory pick this year because nobody's going to, you know, sign him. Will they get a compensatory pick if he eventually gets signed somewhere? I don't know. I think it was just, you know, they had to cut their losses. I think so. I think they made a mistake by franchising him. They didn't have to franchise anybody. They could have franchised Brian Arakpo, even though he wasn't, you know, coming up on his contract, because his contract ended this year. But I still think you can franchise a player with 1 year left on their contract, or you can you can designate them or something like that. So I think they wasted that on somebody that's not going to be there and not going to give them any return. And this leads to, well, what Jay Gruden was talking about this week at the Combine. You know, he was asked many, many questions about RG3, about what's the issues in Washington, how are the Redskins going to be better, and stuff like that. Well, here's what he had to say about pointing fingers in that locker room and people taking personal responsibility.
I don't know what happened last year at the end as far as finger point was concerned, but you never want to have that in your locker room ever, and we want to make sure that that doesn't happen if it did happen. I'm not sure that that actually happened. So moving forward, obviously everybody's excited to come back. It's a new regime. It's new this. We're going to have new players. We're going to have a new system, so to speak, and hopefully the players come in with a new attitude, excited, and ready to go.
So, as you said, it's a new regime, Jerry. New players. Players like Fred Davis are not going to stay on this team. You know, London Fletcher, he's pretty much done. Who steps up and becomes the leader of this franchise? Because several former Redskins and several commentators said that Robert Griffin III is not a leader or not the leader of that team. Where do they look for? D'Angelo Hall, they just signed him to a five-year, $20 million contract. But his attitude sometimes sucks, but he's a performer. You know, do they look to Ryan Kerrigan, a young cat, Barry Coldfield, who's a aged veteran but still good? Is it Trey Williams? You know, who do you see being the leader of this team under this Jay Gruden administration? And how do the Skins fix what, you know, seems to be troubled waters?
Oof. This is a very tough one because you lose one of your staples on the defensive side of the ball and on the team, and a solid citizen on and off the field and in the locker room in London Fletcher. I have no idea who's going to step up and be that person. You would like to think it would be the quarterback, but he's got issues that's got to be resolved, in my opinion, first. Obviously, that it would be nice if he was the quarterback, if it was the quarterback with Robert Griffin III, but he's got to – I think he's got to prove himself. I really do. Even though this will be his third year, I think he's got to prove himself to his teammates. For the reason that all the things that took place on and off the field, meaning with his press conferences and some of the things that he actually came out and said about either the coaching staff or the play of the team. You know what? Right now, I think the face of the franchise or of the head man that's going to lead this team is the head coach, because like that clip said, new regime, new offense and defense coming in basically, so the whole mindset basically is going to have to change because of the head coach. So the head coach is going to set the tone. And then we'll have to see who steps up and goes along with the coach in the locker room, and who steps up. Is it the quarterback, what you would like to look for it to be, or is it going to be somebody on the defensive side? I can't see Leon Hall. I'm not a big Leon Hall fan. I was extremely
DeAngelo.
Surprised.
DeAngelo.
I'm sorry. DeAngelo Hall. I'm very surprised that they re-signed that guy. Gave him a new contract. I'm extremely surprised about that because, to me, he's nothing but a knucklehead. He does a lot of knucklehead things, and for the most part, out of control a lot of times. And you're in a political town. I think there's a lot of politicians on that team. And Lyndon Fletcher wasn't a politician and pretty much was the sounding board, so to speak, from the coaching staff and from the players, because he can relate to both of them. That's not in there now. So I have no idea. Bring it back full circle, I have no idea who would be the leader. The leader. Hopefully the quarterback steps up and wakes up and realizes that he's got to do things to show that he's a leader and not just because he's trying to push his brand.
All right. Well, let's venture on to another team of interest. Bill, the number one draft pick in this year's NFL draft. Everybody's saying, or at least the Johnny Manziel fan club is saying, he's going to be pick number one. He's going to be this. He's going to be that. And then those that follow the sport pretty closely see that the Texans are really going to go after Jadeveon Clowney. They had two opportunities with the first pick, I believe. One time they had a chance to get Vince Young, and you know, with DeMario Williams. One's still in the league. One is bankrupt trying to get back into the league. Granted, Williams is no longer with the Texans, but if they would have kept a 4-3 scheme, I think Williams would have stayed because he's not a good outside linebacker. He's a pure pass rusher, and that's what Jadeveon Clowney is. And I think O'Brien is moving back to a 4-3, so to speak. And if you have two great DNs or defensive linemen, whether one's interior and one's exterior, meaning a D tackle and a DN, you can cause some trouble. Now, the word is, this is the buzz I'm hearing. The Texans are going to get a second first-round pick, and they plan to move next year's first round to move up and pick Mr. Blake Bortles. Let's hear from the head coach, the new head coach of the Texans, Mr. O'Brien, about Blake Bortles.
We played against him, at Central Florida, the Penn State game, and he played well. You know, they beat us, and I thought he threw the ball well that night. Obviously I have a connection with George O'Leary, and their coaching staff thinks very highly of him there. He's a big guy, he's athletic, he's a competitive guy, so it's been fun to watch him play on tape, and it'll be good to watch him work out here.
Translation? I can't wait to get my hands on him and put him in my system. What do you think, JT? This is your team.
This is the deal, man. This is the deal to me. This is the deal to me. And I keep on saying it, and I hope it comes true. This is what I want for my team. Jadeveon Clowney was the first pick. Excuse me?
You want Mark Sanchez.
Jadeveon Clowney with my first pick. And then after that, if they get another first-round pick, then quite naturally I would go after a quarterback, or maybe a Blake Bortles. I'm not really too high on Johnny Manziel. But I don't understand why there's not more talk about the second guy, which is a quarterback that I want to for my team to pick up, probably in the second
Bridgewater?
Round. Probably a second. Excuse me?
I thought you liked Bridgewater.
No, I don't like Teddy Bridgewater either. The quarterback that I do like, that I hope they pick up, that's a proven winner. He's a proven winner, two-time college champion from your favorite college, one of your favorite colleges, Alabama, A.J. McCarron. A.J. McCarron. He's only lost three games in college, only three games his whole career as the starting quarterback in college. And they're not too keen on his arm strength or the question about if he can make all the throws. I think he's done it in the SEC, which is a mini NFL league. I think he can do it in the NFL. Clowney in the first round with the first pick, come around even if you don't get anybody else in the first round. Go in the second round because he'll be there. A.J. McCarron in the second round. There you got the pass rusher, the bookend with J.J. Watt, and you got your quarterback. That's a proven winner.
Jerry, I got to tell you, bro, I disagree on the grounds that A.J. McCarron is not a second-round pick. I think A.J. is more of a third or fourth rounder because he's a game manager.
Okay. Well, I have a higher opinion than you do.
I mean, that's fine. I'm not going to knock your opinion. I'm just saying I disagree with it, mainly because with Alabama's run game, he was able to do more play action. He was able to find the open man. Now, here's the deal. By the way, I want to say congratulations to a friend of mine, a high school friend of mine, played football with him, Azar Abdul-Rahim, former Friendship collegiate high school head football coach, now defensive backs coach for Alabama. Nick Saban found him. He didn't go looking for Nick Saban, and that says a lot about him. I know his work ethic. I know how good he is and stuff like that, so I want to say congratulations to him. But to start, I think that A.J. McCarron is a very good quarterback. He's a Joe Flacco. He's a very good Joe Flacco. I'll give him that. The thing is, without Flacco's security blanket, who is two people, Dennis Pitta and Anquan Boldin, you saw this year what he really was, which is a mid-level, mediocre quarterback.
Well, let me stop you there. Let me stop you there.
Oh, stop
because
me.
Let me stop you there. Just look at the weapons. Just look at the weapons that A.J. McCarron, if he was to go with the Texans, has at his disposal. Then I just think about this, and I'm going to run them down to you. First of all, I'm going to the running back, who's supposed to be fine after his surgery, Arian Foster, one of the best backs in the league.
But what
got
did
Andre
you say
Johnson.
About
wait a minute.
What did you say
just,
about
just let me finish. Got Andre Johnson to speak of. You got, on the other side, you got DeAndre Hopkins, which is no slouch, with a second year under his belt, which is going to be a lot more effective than he was in the first year. Then you have two wide receivers. I mean, two tight ends that are both of them were very effective. Owen Daniels and Garrett Graham, and I think they can be the same. So he's got. He runs the gamut of offensive weapons, a running back, two wide receivers, and two tight ends, and a not-too-shabby offensive line. So, and a defense that's going to have Jadeveon Clowney, if they draft him, as a bookend with J.J. Watt, not to speak of all the other weapons that they have, that they have on the defensive side. So, he doesn't have to be a Tom Brady. He doesn't have to be a Peyton Manning. He can be a Colin Kaepernick type of quarterback. Run the football, play good defense, and make a play every now and then. Or Russell Wilson. Run the football, have a good defense, and make a play every now and then. It's a formula that a lot of teams are going to adopt now. Because they see how effective it was with the Seahawks. And not to speak of that the coach, Bill O'Brien, happens to be a very good coach of a quarterback. And A.J. McCarron, very coachable.
All right. Again, I don't disagree with you that A.J. is a very good and talented quarterback. No disagreement whatsoever. But I don't think he's a guy that I'll put the ball in his hands to win the game or take him to the Super Bowl. He's, to me, and you might laugh, he's a Trent Dilfer.
Oh, hell no.
To me,
hell no.
He's a Trent Dilfer.
Hell no.
He's a
not
effective, even he's an effective game manager. Now, look, I'm opening the doors of the church right now. I'm going to bring in your co-host.
Unfortunately,
again,
I'm at my destination, and I have to leave. So,
well, that's good because your co-host is jumping on. The Reverend's going to discuss what we're just talking about. He's been listening for the past couple minutes. And if you got to drop, just go ahead and drop. But Red Fantasy, what do you think about Jerry's assertion that when and if the Texans get to Jadeveon Clowney, that A.J. McCarron in the second round would be their pick if they don't move up in the first to get another quarterback?
Well, I want to say first, good morning and good afternoon to you guys on the East Coast. What's going on, brother?
What's up?
Anyway, I kind of agree. Me and Jerry talked about last week. The pick to me is Jadeveon Clowney with the first pick for them. I think they should – I don't know about the A.J. McCarron thing. I kind of agree with, I think Vic was talking about saying he's a Trent Dilfer. I kind of see him as an Alex Smith, like a game manager.
Okay.
But the guy has played in pressure situations. He's played with big-time talent. So I think the stage wouldn't be too overwhelming for him to step in and be able to handle that situation. And I totally agree with you, Jerry. They have pieces in place for him to be successful because he would not have to throw the ball around the field. He would just have to play action pass and just simply just don't turn the ball over and just be the game manager. But I think there's too many other free agents or other quarterbacks that are out there that you can go in a different direction other than AJ McCarron. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, my basic premise is this. I don't want a first-round quarterback in Bortles or Manziel. I want the pass rusher. I want Jadeveon Clowney. That's the special talent with the team with J.J. Watt. And under the tutelage of J.J. Watt and other leaders on that team, they can be a special defense with those two guys leading them on the front.
Well, JT, I know you got to get ready to get out of here. And,
I got to go now.
All right, well, tomorrow, hopefully you'll be on with the Red doing the master plan. What's your thoughts for tomorrow? Are you going to discuss the NFL Combine? Because they're doing defensive linemen tomorrow.
We're going to be having running backs, quarterbacks, and wide receivers tomorrow. So this tomorrow is a good day to watch the combine. It's an extremely good day to watch the combine. We're going to be talking about that.
All right, JT. Peace out. Have a safe day. And
you guys enjoy the day. Take it easy.
All right. That was JT ATM Money making it rain over there in New Jersey. Do what he do. He's moving JerMichael Finley out of his basement into a casket somewhere. Because that's what JT does. He just hides JerMichael Finley from time to time. But, Red, we talked about Jay Gruden and the Redskins situation. We've talked about the Texans and the number one draft pick and what they should do with it. When we come back, we're going to hear from John Elway and find out what Elway has to say about Johnny Manziel. We'll hear from Pete Carroll. We'll also hear from Ron Rivera. Stick and stay with me. It's Mr. FSP doing what I do because I do it for you. We'll be back in a minute.
If you're looking to whet your appetite for engaging and informative talk radio, the lineup at the Fantasy Sports and Politics Network has exactly what you need. Shows like The Master Plan with Jerry the Master Taylor, Time Out with women's basketball legend Sylvia Crawley, Compassion Dakini, hosted by Kim Fung, No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor, The FSP Crew Show with co-hosts Jerry Black and The Joker, and The Fantasy Sports and Politics Show, all focus on the hot topics in sports, politics, and in life. By visiting fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com, you'll gain great insight into each program and host, access to the show's archive, as well as outstanding articles, photos, and a whole lot more. As well, because of its large and steadily growing following, fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com is a great place to advertise. Stop by today at fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com. Information, motivation, variety.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Welcome to the FSP show on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's me, it's me, Mr. FSP. JTAT and Money stepped away, and now we have Rev Fantasy coming out of professional. He was talking with Mike Sam about some things, so they had to relate to one another. And we're about to tackle the topic of the comments John Elway made about Johnny Manziel. I'm going to play this piece by Elway. I'm going to get the Rev's comments on it, and then I'm going to pontificate about the situation. Here's John Elway on Johnny Manziel.
I think he's a great little player. You know, and I don't say little. I shouldn't say little. I'm sorry. I mean, He's a guy that he's fun to watch on film. He's a great competitor, and I think that's what his strength is the fact that he is a great, great competitor. And in that position, you got to have that. And, you know, that's what makes him tick.
All right, Red. what do you think about what Elway said? Are you reading into it, or are you believing his explanation?
You heard him say, Johnny Manziel, a great little player. Started firing shots at Johnny. But, no, I mean, I think me and you, we were talking about it yesterday. Johnny Manziel, a player. He's going to make plays for you. But some of the things we watched and we've seen some highlights of him the other day on ESPN. We were sitting there talking. I think the things he was doing in college is going to be dangerous in the NFL. The way he scrambles around, he's running around with the ball, carrying it like a loaf of bread. That's the recipe for getting stripped. That's the recipe for getting turnovers, the recipe for getting drilled, basically. So do I think he's going to be able to do some of the special things he was doing in college and in the NFL? No, I don't think so. But I think the recipe for teams will keep him in the pocket, make him be a pocket passer like we saw teams try to do with Russell Wilson. And you saw Russell Wilson struggle sometimes in that role where he couldn't improvise and have improv to his game. So I just when I think of Johnny Manziel, there's a lot of unknowns, and there's a lot of things that scare me about him. There's red flags, but people overlook those things just because he's such a freakish athlete that he makes plays. And really, Johnny Manziel should be freaking, when he gets drafted, he should be giving a cut of his money to Russell Wilson for helping him out, because we wouldn't even be talking about Johnny Manziel if it wasn't for Russell Wilson. Just a couple years ago, yeah, he probably wouldn't even be going in the first round. He'd definitely third round to seventh round, possibly not even getting drafted just because of his size. So,
well, I'll say this, Red. Johnny Manziel has the biggest hands out of the three top quarterbacks coming into the draft. He has a 9 7/8 wingspan on his hand, whereas Bortles has a 9 3/8, and Teddy Bridgewater, which to me is the pure pocket passing quarterback intelligence-wise, has the smallest hands at 9 1/4 or something like that. By the way, with all that running around and stuff, in the SEC, Manziel only fumbled twice, whereas Bortles fumbled 8 times, and Bridgewater, I believe, 3 or 4. So the strip thing, yeah, it's possible because you're playing against upper-tier talent, but we both say that the SEC is the minors of the NFL. So if you're successful and you're very good there, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be successful in the NFL. Bill Polian made the comment that players like Doug Flutie, he thinks he's a Doug Flutie-type player, stature, heart, and ability. Now, Doug Flutie was a very good quarterback, but they had to move the pocket for him. I think whoever picks Johnny Manziel will have to have an agile offensive line. So translation to me, that line has to be a zone-blocking offensive line. You can't have your 300-plus pounders on the line just maulers. You need a offensive line that can move left to right, back and forward, and compensate for his athletic ability. Now, you made the comment about Russell Wilson not being a good pocket passer. I disagree. I think Russell's a good pocket passer. He, again, was working with second and third string players because his top two receivers were injury prone, and he had nobody to throw to. So he had to create on the go. So he had to move around in the pocket. And you saw in the Super Bowl, yeah, he moved around. Yeah, he got out of the pocket. But he threw some pretty good darts down the field from the pocket to the tight end, to the receivers, and he made plays happen with his arm. Again, the thing about Johnny Manziel, I say that Mike Evans, who for some reason is no longer in a lot of people's top 10 of drafting, and I like Taj, not Taj Boyd, Sammy Watkins. I think he and Sammy Watkins are pretty neck and neck, but Watkins has him because he has speed. Made Johnny Manziel. I think Mike Evans made Johnny Manziel, and Johnny needs that big, rangy receiver like a Josh Gordon, like a Megatron, like what's Chicago? Oh, my God, I can't think of the names right now. Alshon Jeffries and Brandon Marshall. He needs somebody like that so he can put the ball in the air in the vicinity so they can go and get it. But also, more importantly, he needs what Russell Wilson has, which is a strong run game and a damn good defense. Now, projections has him going to the Raiders. What's the guy? Daniel Jeremiah, his top 10 has Manziel going to the Raiders. No, Manziel going to the Jaguars. Bridgewater going to the Raiders. And Bortles going to the team directly after them, which is Cleveland. That's possible, but I don't see those three going back-to-back-to-back like that. I really don't. I see possibly this being a very offensive and defensive lineman heavy draft, just like last year. What are your thoughts on that before we move to the next topic?
I mean, the Raiders, they have the most cap space to spend, like we were talking about last week. So for the Raiders to make a splash with their fan base, it wouldn't shock me if they went ahead and drafted Johnny Manziel. Well, I do agree with you. Whatever team he does go to, they needed definitely his own blocking system just because it fits his skill set with a line that's able to be mobile and move and block in gaps. But I don't know if that's – I think that's how if he was to go to Houston, they ran zone blocking scheme with Adrian Foster before, so it wouldn't be a big change for them for Adrian Foster to adapt to the zone blocking. That's what made him successful because he likes to shoot and read gaps and be able to exploit those. So it would be a better fit, Adrian Foster in Houston. And so that would be probably a good fit, but I just don't see it happening. I think Jadeveon Clowney will be that pick. And the Rams definitely at number two won't draft Johnny Manziel. They have a quarterback, Sam Bradford. They need O-line help and receiver help. And with that fourth pick, though, Cleveland, we talked about it on the master plan last week. What I said Cleveland would do with that fourth pick was draft Sammy Watkins and form a young offensive juggernaut with Sammy Watkins, Josh Gordon, and Jordan Cameron and go out and get a big-time running back in free agency. And it wouldn't really matter who the quarterback was. So it's pretty tough to call. You never don't know how these things are going to shake out, but you're right. There won't be three quarterbacks selected back-to-back-to-back. That's a sure thing. And I just think Johnny, he could go anywhere from number one all the way down to, realistically, he could go all the way down to number 10. And you never don't know, depending on what happens at the combine or teams. I think teams are going to fall in love with Blake Bortles just because of his makeup. He's 6'5". He's a big guy. He's got the prototypical quote-unquote, pro-style kind of frame. Bridgewater is a little concerned about his frame just because he's slightly undersized as far as weight, but he's tall. He has a good arm. And I don't think the whole hand thing, what you were talking about, this guy's got big hands, this guy's got small hands. To me, that don't mean crap. I mean, I don't understand how you can just say, oh, this guy's got big hands, so that quantifies him being, something great. So I don't buy into all that baloney at the combine. And a player is going to make plays. So a guy like Johnny Manziel, he'll make plays. It's all about getting drafted to a team that's going to suit his kind of play. So if he can go to a team that's going to adapt to his kind of play, like you said, with zone blocking, with he definitely needs a team like Seattle where he's got a good running back, he's got a good line, and he needs some receivers, like you said, for sure. He definitely needs a big time receiver. And he showed that at A&M. He only pretty much threw it to one guy, and that was Mike Evans. So I think Johnny Manziel, that could definitely go into a team like the Texans really would be a blessing for him. I think so, but I just don't see that being the pick.
Okay. Well, let's move on. I think that topic is going to get fleshed out tomorrow, especially since you and JT are going to discuss quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers. So I don't want to step on you guys' glory and beat it in the bush today. I'll let you guys talk about that tomorrow. On the master plan, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 a.m. Pacific. So we'll let you guys do that. Let's move on to a subject matter of keeping a team together. You talked about, and I'm glad you brought it up, you talked about Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. Now, they had a few players that, you know, are going to be decent free agents. Michael Bennett's brother, or is it Michael Bennett, or is, no, it's Martellus Bennett's brother. I forgot his first name, but the Bennett guy, defensive tackle for the Seattle Seahawks, he already said he's willing to take a pay cut to stay in Seattle. I really don't care what happens to Golden Tate. I am not lying. I don't like Golden Tate as a number one anything. I think he's a number three or four on that team, maybe even five. The reason why I say that is Percy Harvin is definitely their number one guy. Sidney Rice is their number two guy, but Sidney doesn't stay healthy, so you can't really count on him. So that kind of puts
They just cut him also yesterday.
Huh?
They just cut Sidney Rice yesterday.
Oh, okay, cool. So that puts Doug Baldwin at number two, who, by the way, proved that he could be a number one guy in that offense. And then you got Curse. So you got a lot of young, hungry guys right there, and they haven't even drafted yet. They'll have the last pick in the first round. And to me, I think they either find Chandler's replacement, because I believe Chandler's coming up on his last year of his contract, or he's getting in that area and he's a little older. So you want to get somebody just as good as Chandler at the strong safety position to groom him. Or you take a chance on a receiver, because there's some decent receivers coming out. And maybe, just maybe, you get a Taj Boyd out of Clemson. A lot of people aren't talking about Taj Boyd. I think he'll be, again, a Russell Wilson-like quarterback. He's tall, he's athletic, and he can throw the ball. But I see him being a steal for some team. Now, if Seattle cuts or releases Tavares Jackson, which I don't see why they wouldn't, because the kid, he's okay, but once you get Russell off the field, that's a very, very big downgrade at quarterback. So I think you might want to get somebody later on in the draft to back up Russell and make Russell compete, even though he's undoubtedly their leading, the leader of that team, and Marshawn Lynch, of course. But let me hear Pete Carroll and what Carroll has to say about keeping the Seahawks together.
We're working real hard, as we have for the years we've been together, to keep this team together. We've liked the makings of this team for 3 years now. After we got through the first year and when that second draft, we could tell we were going someplace. And we love those guys. We just try to keep it together. So that's John's job to really manage that by having a long vision, and he's doing it. We really care about our guys. We've dug in with our people. We want those guys to come back and continue to play for us.
So, again, Pete Carroll decides, and the general manager and the brass of Seattle, you know, they want to keep everything they have together as best they can. You know, Sidney was supposed to get a lot of money this year. He's injury prone, and as you said, They cut him. So that saves them a little cap space. They can afford to bring in or pay Bennett. I hope they don't pay Golden Tate. I really hope they don't pay him because I don't think he deserves it. I really don't. But you got a lot of talent there in Seattle, and Pete wants to do it. Now, in Jacksonville, year number two under, is it Gus Bradley, I believe, down there in Jacksonville, the head coach, and they got the general manager from Seattle as well, their general manager from Seattle. They're trying to build a very similar system. But they started with defense. Jacksonville started with an offensive tackle, and quite possibly they're going to get another offensive player this year. How does Pete Carroll and the Seahawks keep that team together, and how does Jacksonville, with their coaches and front office, mimic what happened in Seattle? Speak on it, Rev.
Well, I mean, I give kudos to Pete Carroll for being able to keep that guys in the NFL together for a long period of time, but that's really a tough thing because most guys are looking for a payday, you know what I mean? And I agree with you totally that it would be foolish for them to throw the bank at Golden Tate. Golden Tate, to me, above average receiver, not a one, could be a two at best. They are kind of thin. I mean, you said they're kind of deep at receiver. I think they're not exactly deep at receiver, but they have some decent pieces at receiver, John. They got all young guys. I think what could help them out is possibly looking at this draft. If I'm the Seahawks and I'm drafting last in the first round, I'm looking at the one position that I think that could help them greatly on offense, from an offense standpoint, is get a good tight end, a good rookie tight end, someone who can stretch the field a little bit and that work that middle of the field for Russell Wilson. Or there's all kinds of even a receiver that they got options to go at receiver. They could go from the kid from Florida State. They could Benjamin, who's like 6'5", 230, who's a big receiver. That's what they Curtis is a big guy, but they still got all those little small receivers like Golden Tate and a bunch of other guys that ball in their little guys. They could even go with Marcus Lee out of USC, who was a beast in college. He put up great numbers, but he's a little guy. So he could either just let Golden Tate walk and draft a Marcus Lee, who to me had a better career than Golden Tate ever did in college. So there's options out there at the receiver and offensive side. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, defensively, I think they'll reload on that side of the ball. They got pretty much 80, 90% of that defense is going to be intact. They just need to maybe plug and play a couple guys that they could lose in free agency, like Bennett on D-line. But they could draft all that. So, and they could replace all that and get a little more depth. They have a lot of picks. So, for them, it's just like the Niners, them, it's about adding depth. So the more depth you can get on the defensive side of the ball, the better you're going to be. Your neutral is going to be, because then you got all pros starting, and you got those young guys that come in and play sparingly, but they're learning. So that's the key. And then you can afford to let a guy walk, because truth be told, Seattle, there's a lot of teams coming up. Seattle, the Niners. They're in a great position now, but come after next year, they're faced with some real dilemmas on who's going to get paid, because Seattle's situation, you got Russell Wilson and you got Sherman coming up, and you already know both of them guys are going to want max money. So it's about locking up guys who you can lock up now at a cheaper price.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rez, you're right about that, but I think they've got a plan to pay both of them. Russell's not going to get max money. I'll tell you that right now. He'll get very, very good money. It depends on what he does this year. It really does, because as you said, teams are coming up. The West, and I said this at the beginning of the summer, even before anybody saw anything, and people laughed at me. I said that NFC West is the best division in football right now, and I got laughed at on this show by my cousin, by Jerry, by a few other folks. But I
didn't laugh at you.
Well, I said it on the show, and I was like, they were like, "Are you crazy?" I'm like, "No, look at it. It's defensive oriented. The whole division is, and Arizona's coming up strong." Now, here's a question I got for you. You were just talking to Sammy. You were in the confessional booth with Sam, with Mike Sam. Do you think, it's a two-part question, do you think that Seattle will take a shot on this guy as a pass-rushing DN? Do you see him going to Jacksonville later on, like in the third or fourth round, to start their movement to become more like Seattle?
I think both are in play, but I'm going to even throw one more at you. I think another team that could be looking at Michael Sam's is because they're talking about they want to add another pass rusher to their team is St. Louis. They got Robert Quinn. You got Chris Long. But they've been talking about they want to upgrade at the defensive end position. So I think he would be a perfect fit for all three teams would be great. I just think he would learn a lot with St. Louis. You'd learn from two all-pro, and Chris Long's pretty solid. So.
Okay. I mean, I'm just throwing stuff out there because of the systems and the type of locker rooms. I think that Pete Carroll and Seattle, they could handle that. And I think that the people in Jacksonville are trying to change the mindset of that locker room and those people. And what better way to start that by getting solid players up front and, you know, in the third, fourth round, some people are saying that Sam might not even be drafted based upon his skill level. I'm like, are you stupid? But anyway, based upon what they're trying to build in Jacksonville, and they want the attention because they're trying to sell out seats and stuff, he could land there because they're on the chopping block. When MJD's going back to Jacksonville. I already told you, I think he's going to the Raiders. I really think so. If he don't go to the Raiders, he's going to your other team, Cleveland. He's leaving Jacksonville. So once he's gone, you know, I think the attention span for the folks in Jacksonville, they're going to need something. And that would be a great start for them to do that. But, again, I think he's a special player that has the ability to turn the corner and be productive. Maybe he's best in a 3-4 where he can just be strictly an outside pass rusher like DeMarcus Ware was, because rarely did DeMarcus Ware drop back in coverage. But he did. His main thing was rushing the passer. I think Mike Sam can be groomed into a DeMarcus Ware, in my opinion, given the right circumstances.
I could tell you, Michael Sam, I'm gonna throw a guy who's not a big-time star in the NFL, but he kind of reminds me of Michael Sam's kind of game. Undersized guy who gets after the passers. He kind of reminds me of a guy like Trent Cole from Philadelphia for the Eagles.
Yeah.
Very speed rusher, slightly undersized, but he gets it done because he's got an unbelievable motor. I don't know if you agree with that analogy, but it just seems like he's got that kind of same game.
I mean, I can see that. I can. I just think he needs to be put in a system that will allow him to be dominant as a pass rusher. And I think he can do it in a 3-4. In a 4-3, he would have to be more like a Robert Mathis was as a narrow lineman. His speed, Dwight Freeman, with his speed, not power. We'll see what happens, because it's not often that a co-SEC Defensive Player of the Year or a SEC Defensive Player of the Year is not considered a top-round draft pick. Meaning, you come out of the SEC as a defensive player of the year, you're going to be paid. You're going to be in the first or second round. They're talking about this kid won't go until like the third or fourth round, I mean the fourth or fifth round. And I'm like, his college tells him different. With the right coaching, I think he'll be great. If he goes to the Jets, as dysfunctional as that place is, you know, your boy, Rob Ryan, can work with him and get him where he wants to be. I think he can.
Anyway, I think you're right.
And Dallas, don't forget Dallas, because they're already saying DeMarcus Ware is kind of long in the tooth. And what a better place to learn from a great player like DeMarcus Ware, where you're in the state of steers and queers. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. All right, we're going to move on real quick to Riverboat Ron. Riverboat Ron. Ron Rivera of the Carolina Panthers. Carolina put it together this year. After a slow start, Ron Rivera was already on the hot seat, and then all of a sudden, Cam Newton, D'Angelo Williams, and all these other guys decide to play harder for him, keyed by their defense. Luke Kuechly, that awesome defensive front line, it catapulted them to win the NFC South. They won't win it this year. No, they won't. They won't. I'm going to pick Atlanta, and I'm going to pick Carolina to finish maybe last. Last in the NFC South.
Last?
Yes. I have it going this way, off preliminary. I got to wait after the draft, and I evaluate who they pick up in the draft and who they sign in free agency. But here's how I see it happening, quite honestly. I see Atlanta, Tampa, and New Orleans with the same record, Carolina last. And I'm going to tell you why. And we're going to hear from Ron Rivera in a minute. But under Lovie Smith, Tampa Bay's defense is going to be hardcore. A lot of people forget the talent they got on that defense, or they have on that defense. Now, Tampa will be drafting a quarterback. Well, no, excuse me. They won't be drafting a quarterback. They'll be drafting another offensive lineman or a receiver. You know, they've tied up a lot of money in receivers right now. But you got to remember who's coming back next year. The muscle hamster. You got the muscle hamster. You got my guy Vincent Jackson. You got the young tight end in White. You got Mike Williams, if he comes back healthy, and you got the other guy coming in. I would not be surprised if Mike Evans ends up in Tampa Bay. I'm telling you, you put that in there with that defense, with Revis Island, Mark Barron, and that young, hungry defense. Tampa Bay is going to either have the same record as New Orleans or come out above New Orleans. Once Matty Ice gets an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman, they're going to win that division because Steven Jackson is going to run, Julio and Roddy will be healthy, and their young tight end is going to step up. And I see them going to like a three-receiver set and a tight end, no fullback, and just, you know, using Harry Douglas more in a three-receiver formation. I see them going to that formation a lot more. But Riverboat Ron says they've got to capitalize on their success this year. I don't think they will. But here's what Ron Rivera has to say about the Panthers next year.
Now really is the hard part. You know, like they say, it's tough to get to the top. Now it's tough to get, you know, stay on top. And we're not where we want to be. By any stretch of the imagination, we've got a ways to go as a football team. But we believe we've made the right steps. We've taken the right strides. We've put ourselves in position. And the commitment was made to give us the opportunity to do it again.
All right. What commitment was made? And do you see him doing it, Rev?
Ah, I totally think you're off guard when you say that they're going to finish last. I don't see that. I think the team that I see that could possibly take a step back next year, I think it's the Saints in that division. I do agree with you on Tampa Bay. Just Lovie Smith being there, I think their defense was already good. He could take them to elite status because they have a lot of young guys on that defense. And I was just reading also the other day on rumor mill that Tampa Bay still might be in play for a quarterback in free agency. They're not exactly sure if they want to hand the reins completely to Mike Glennon, but there's still some kind of there's some struggles with that if they want to go forward with Mike Glennon as quarterback. There's talk that now he could come back down there and possibly compete for the starting job, or add a veteran presence behind him to push him. But yeah, I mean, and Carolina. So we're talking about Carolina. It's going to be tough for them to match their win total from this year. And one reason is that division, honestly, like we were talking about the toughest division in football, that might be the second toughest division in football for this upcoming year, just due to the fact that the Falcons are going to be better. You see the talent. That was just kind of a fluke thing that happened to these guys. Plus, if you know anything about the Falcons under Mike Smith, whenever they have these spurts where they have like 3-4 great seasons under him, and then they stink it up for one season, they always bounce back and have a monster season next year. So I'll say that they're going to have a better season. Tampa Bay is going to be much better. So you add that into the mix with New Orleans already, I think those four teams are going to be beating the hell out of each other during the season. So it very well could come down to whoever has the best non-conference scheduling and the easiest and provides who can win those, just due to the fact of getting pure W's. So it's going to be a tough division, and it's going to be hard for Carolina. What do I see Carolina doing in the draft this year? For me, it's simple what they do in the draft this year. They go receiver. They got to get another receiver. Cam Newton's a beast. You got plenty of guys at running back. I think they need to sign a free agent receiver, and they need to go freaking draft a young guy. And that gives – they got Brandon LaFell, who's not bad, young guy, still unproven. Three, two at best receiver. Steve Smith is not even a shell of what he was before, but he still plays, and he's proven to be a guy that you want to keep on the team. But he gets nicked up, and he's definitely not – a speed burner like he was, but he still goes across the middle and gets routes. They just need a guy that could come in and just be dominant and just dominate and run the deep route and cams at that cannon and get the ball to him. And I'm going to say a guy like we were just talking about these young receivers now. A Mike Evans would be great for there. I don't know if he'll be around that long in the draft. A guy like Benjamin from Florida State, who's 6'5", 230, big receiver. Or they could freaking even go, like I said, with old boy Marcus Lee from USC, who just flat out fly, who's an undersized receiver, but he can move all over the field, and he's got hands. So that's how I see them going in the draft.
Okay. Well, I think you're on to something. I think Carolina will draft two receivers first. Bottom line, I think they will draft two receivers first because they're going to get ready to replace Steve Smith in a couple of years. I don't think Amani is a number two receiver for them. I think that they're going to have to do that. They're just going to have to do that. We'll table this conversation. When we come back, the Rev and I will get into a little UFC action before we end the show. Ronda Rousey versus Sarah McMahon is the main event. There are a couple of good fights on the card. We're going to talk about them in about a minute and a half. So stick it with me, it's your boy FSP on Fantasy Sports and Politics Saturday edition, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. Pacific. Sitting there with me right now is the Rev. We'll be back in about a minute and a half. See you in a minute.
For a roundup of the week's events, interviews, and a whole lot more, tune in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern for the FSP Cruise Show, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. Here's a sample.
We have Mr. Stephen A. Smith. Hello, Stephen A. I'm glad to, this is Jerry, your host, along with my co-host Black and Jeff on here. Glad to join us.
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
What's going on, baby?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. The FSP Crew Show. Information, motivation, variety. If you love sports, you're in store for a treat. Every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern, you can tune into The Master Plan with Jerry the Master Taylor, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. The Master Plan features
a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of NBA, a little bit of baseball, a little bit of basketball, a little bit of football, a little bit of everything. And this is The Master Plan.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. The Master Plan. Information, motivation, variety.
I did not have a sexual relations with that woman, but I do listen to Fantasy Sports and Politics at 6 p.m. on Saturdays with Victor Gardner and Rick Saban. Hillary, I need a big Bubba cheesesteak. Thank you, y'all. Bubba, let's
meet. Hi, I'm Russell Gilchrist. When I need fantasy sports advice, I listen to Fantasy Sports and Politics on Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's back. We're back. It's Miss Mitchell Sappers sitting in with me right now is the Red Fantasy, taking over for the reins of JTATM Money. He's out there making it rain, doing what he does in New Jersey. We covered football, the draft. We talked about the Redskins. We talked about the Texans. We talked about the NFC South, NFC West, a lot of things. Now we're going to transition. I like the term transition because we're talking about a sport that has a lot of transitions, and that is mixed martial arts. UFC 170 tonight, main event, the champion, Ronda Rousey versus the number four contender, Sarah McMahon. How apropos is this fight happening during the Winter Olympics? Two former Olympians, both medalists, one gold, one bronze, one in wrestling, one in judo. Facing each other for the first time, both undefeated, the champion, Ronda Rousey, is 8-0. Sarah McMahon, the challenger, 7-0. Ronda has won 29% of her fights by KO, 29% by submission, and pretty much half, 43% by decision. The champ, on the other hand, her go-to move, the armbar. 100% of her wins have come by submission and the armbar. Sarah McMahon recently said that Ronda thinks she can knock out Cain Velasquez. Sarah then went on to say that she doesn't believe Ronda can knock anybody out and would love to see her try to do it to her. Interesting. This is a tale of two very good fighters. Sarah McMahon, her takedown defense is at 100%. Ronda Rousey is at 60%. Takedown accuracy, of course, Sarah McMahon being the wrestler, she should have more of these in mind, is 80%, whereas the judo champion, Ronda Rousey, is at 70.5%. Now, you know, you can do different types of throws and twists and stuff like that for this judo champion in many ways, but a wrestler versus a judo person, kind of tough. Ronda stands 1 inch taller than Sarah, but Sarah's like a man. She's built like a dude. tough as nails, hard tank, and all that good stuff. Rhonda's not bad to look at. Sarah, I'd have to see her in some makeup or something. I don't know. Reverend, please open the doors of the church and welcome in these two young women as they headline UFC 170. What are your thoughts on this fight? Rev, I believe you have me on mute.
Sorry, buddy. They're giving a little communion over here to the congregation. Hey, being the company's front man on UFC, you know, I study UFC. I love it. And this fight gets me excited, you know, like you said. In the spirit of the Olympics, we got two Olympians that are high-level. One's a judo artist and one's a wrestler. And it's gonna be interesting, this fight, breaking it down, looking at it. We've been talking about it the last couple of days. And how is Ronda Rousey, for the first time, facing a world-class athlete where a wrestler's style, where normally a judo person wants to get you to the ground, now she's playing to her strength is playing to a strength of her opponent, a wrestler. So going to the ground is where Sarah Mann would like it. I just was, last night, I sat up and we talked about, because I told you I didn't know much about Sarah McMahon. I knew we were going to be talking about her. I watched a couple of her fights on the internet. I'm very impressed. She's very well balanced. She can wrestle. She's really, really good at wrestling. And she can strike. She can strike. And I'll tell you what, I think Ronda Rousey, she's skating some thin ice coming up. Even if she gets through Sarah McMahon, her next couple of opponents can be very tough for her because they're lining up, all the top talent, lining up to take out Ronda Rousey. And I think she's going to be in for a world of hurt because even if she gets through Sarah McMahon in this fight, she's probably going to fight Kat Zigo, who's a beast in herself. And I just read now, we just talked about Tito Ortiz just got fired and stepped down as Christine Santos, Cyborg Santos, his manager. And now she's just signed a fight to fight. She fights normally at a higher weight. She dropped down to bantam weight, and she's fighting at 135. But she says she wants a couple practice fights at 135 to get ready for Ronda Rousey. And she says she is coming for Ronda Rousey at the end of this year. So that makes it interesting with this fight, Sarah McMahon. I think people are overlooking her because they haven't seen much of her. But this is this lady is mean. She's a mauler. For one, to be a female wrestler, that's not a trait that's out there in the world that most guys are high on. So you know she's tough as hell. And I think Ronda Rousey got exposed a little bit in her last fight against not against Misha Tate, but the fight before when she fought, what was her name? The other female, the Hispanic female we watched the other day, Vic.
You talking about the chick that cranked her neck?
Yeah.
She's an ex-Marine. I can't remember her name to save my life, but I know who you're talking about.
Regardless, she was 2 seconds from getting dispatched in that fight. She gave up her back. She's not going to be able to get away with that against a high-level competition like Sarah McMahon. So for Ronda Rousey, it's all about she's going to start having to change her game up. We talk about with UFC fighters all the time. You go in with the same game plan that you always do, people game plan for that. People change up their styles. It's happened to the best of UFC fighters that are champions like the Chuck Liddells of the world, and we see where you come in doing the same thing, you eventually get knocked out. And once you get knocked out, you're susceptible to getting clapped and getting taken out every fight after that. So Ronda Rousey needs to be careful in this fight. I think this is a very dangerous fight for her. To ask me who I think is going to win, I'm going to say Ronda Rousey wins it. But I think it's going to be a dog fight, though.
I think so, too. Either way, Ronda has some lucrative stuff happening outside of this fight. She's going to film two movies that she's got lead roles in, and action movies, of course. She gives credit to Carano for the success of female mixed martial artists and action movies and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty good for her to say earlier this week. But I think it's going to be a good fight. I don't like this card. It's only two fights on this card that I want to see, honestly. And that's Cormier versus Cummings because they're hyping it. You know, I don't think there's any real animosity between the two. But Cormier and Cummings and Rousey versus McMahon. Some of these guys, like the prelims, are going to be on Fox Sports 1 starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then you have two fights on UFC Fight Pass starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I don't like this card. I really don't. And I see why Rashad Evans versus Cormier was a good fight and helped build this card. Because those are the only two fights that I think are going to be worthwhile. I like Mike Powell versus Wahlberger, but I don't think it's going to be an exciting fight. McDonald versus Maya, okay, all right, maybe. But real quick.
That McDonald versus Maya fight, even though you have two known guys, their styles are very, very passive fighters. So they're not going to be – someone's going to have to engage somebody in that fight. You know, it just can't be just sitting there watching paint dry. So
well, that's what I'm saying.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think card lacks any explosiveness. But you know what? Usually when the UFC has cards like this where you look at it from the outside and you're like, oh, man, this is going to be a boring-ass card. I'm not getting this. Usually those are the fights that turn out to be the ones that produce.
I don't know. The only other good fight I see is the female fight. When the females fight, things are great. You got the number 3 and number 5 contenders in the bantamweight division, Alexis Davis versus Jessica I, or Evil I, going against each other to headline the prelims on Fox Sports 1. But I don't see this as a good card. Now, real quick, we got about 7 minutes left alive here, so we can go over time real quick. Give me your thoughts on Cormier versus Cummings. Now, Cummings is a guy coming off of, he's 4-0. He's was working at a coffee shop, whatever the case may be. He stayed in good shape. He's apparently gotten under the skin of DC, but I think it's just more to sell the fight than it is anything else. What are his chances? Is it? I mean, half of his wins, he's 4-0. Half of them by submission, half of them by knockout. Does he come in and upset Daniel Cormier, or is Cormier just that naturally good that it's just a, okay, let me just get this over with type fight?
Well, I think in that fight, breaking it down, no one knows much about Patrick Cummings. I mean, I've read a little bit about him. It seems like a lot of fighters don't want to fight him. I don't know why. I don't know what that is, but I don't know. He's fought.
Maybe he's the new Chael Sonnen, because nobody wanted to fight Chael, you know, especially after they saw what he was saying and doing. But then when he beat up Anderson Silva, he became a household name.
Right. I mean, and the guy's strictly a wrestler, a high-level wrestler that, you know, that's a possibility. I mean, he could come in, shock the world. Do I think that's going to happen? I think best-case scenario for him is he has a good showing, and UFC brings him back for another fight. I think that's best-case scenario. I don't think he's got what it takes to beat Daniel Cormier. Do I think there's animosity? No, I don't think there's animosity. I think it's all reaching Daniel Cormier, feeling the pressures of having to lead a pay-per-view. So he's trying to make a name for himself, trying to be a tough guy, which that's not his personality. The one thing I think we're overlooking, too, is Daniel Cormier's. This is his first fight in 205. So how's he going to handle that cut down to 205? You know, how's he going to handle that? Normally he's a guy who fights, you know, in the 230s. I'm sure by fight night he'll be back up to about he'll be up, you know, 215s, 220s, I'm pretty sure. But that weight cut, how does that affect him? You know, that's the real question. And I think he has too much to lose on this fight. He has a potential matchup with John Jones coming. So, and who's to say? If he walks through Patrick Covington's and has no injuries, Rashad's going to be ready in the next 4 weeks, the 6 weeks. He could be right back in the ring again. Here we go in 6 weeks facing Rashad.
You know what? I think that's probably the plan here. That's why I'm saying this fight doesn't really interest me, but I wanted to get the interest from others because it could be a warm-up for Rashad once Rashad comes back. And you never know because if Cummings comes in there and makes it a fight, it could become one of those, well, hold off. Maybe this is the reason why nobody wanted to fight him. You know, maybe he's a dirty fighter. I don't know. But we'll find out tonight at UFC 170 live on pay-per-view. Some people might buy it. Some people might not. I, for one, I'm going to go see it for free at a place where it's bought. It's not bootleg. It's bought. But I don't know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got about 3 minutes left to live there. I want to thank my co-host, JT ATM Money, for stopping by, and the Reverend sitting in, spitting some scripture for us and some great knowledge. Hope you guys enjoyed it, took it, and understood it. Mike Sam just got finished speaking at the NFL Combine. You go to NFL.com, look at that if you're interested in what he has to say. You can talk of the NFL right now, take a little pressure off of everybody else. But we'll see from there. Tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, the Master Plan, JT ATM Money, along with Red Fantasy, they give you the Master Plan where they're going to discuss the NFL Combine, quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers. I think that's a very hot topic, especially coming into getting ready for fantasy football, because we do it year-round, 365, even though I'm going to talk about baseball coming up. We do it all year. Then, on Thursday, we've got FSP Crew Show, Jeff Black and Jerry. They're going to bring on Mike Yes Indeed Reed, I believe, to discuss his upcoming fight in D.C. Also, Bernard Hopkins just signed to fight at the D.C. Armory. So we're going to have some of our affiliates there go to that fight, see if they can get some interviews and report live from the fight. And see what happens there. Then on Friday, Mac Williams, Jerry Taylor, No Chaser, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. You never know what Mac's going to have, but it's going to be good. Then you're right back here with me, Mr. FSP. Next week, I may or may not be on the show because I got to work. Again, we'll see. I'll let JKATM Money know, but we're back here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time doing what we do because we do it for you always and forever. It's Mr. FSP. All right, you got anything to say real quick, Red, before we get off the air?
I really enjoyed today working with your brother, and look forward to all those people out there. Check out the Master Plan, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, where it's going to go down every Sunday. Like you said, we'll be talking NFL. So if you listeners out there, if you're interested in hearing what we have to say from the combine, come on in. Come join us on Sundays.
All right. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get out of here. Peace, love, and hair grease, and all that good stuff. You've been listening to
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack, you in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.